mine and yours. And you don't want no pressure, what but a backup and withdrawal. Cause trust me when I tell you, you don't want that you can crawl. And you don't want to see inside of my... Chapter 16. Never letting Katara drag me out for girl stuff again. Still smarting from those horrible girls the other day, Toph stalked down into the better end of the outer ring, on the hunt for truth in a city built on lies, and hoped she'd know it when she felt it. "I'm looking for stonework," she told the Judee currently watching over them when she left. "Buildings, carvings, fountains. I'll know it when I feel it," she said impatiently when the creepy, smiling woman tried to interrupt. "The Avatar's gotta have the best earthbending training. I can't just sit back and TJing everything I know. I've got to keep looking, see if there's a technique I don't know." All of which was true. None of which had kept the woman and her Dai Li friends from following anyway. Which suited Toph just fine. "I am the greatest earthbender in the world. We'll see who outstubborns who." So here she was, hours later, walking down into the cool of a stone carver's establishment. Reaching out with her bending, Toph felt marble, agates, quartz, and jade. "Oh, right. Can we help you, miss?" "You may," Toph nodded to the owner, and held up one of the ornaments she and Katara had used to crash that awful party. It'd been tricky, getting straight answers at moments she'd be pretty sure she wouldn't be overheard. "I'd like to talk with Luli." "It doesn't look as though it needs repair. Are you looking for a match?"
"I'm looking for a carver," Toph said impatiently. "She did something interesting with a flaw in this jade, and I want to pick her brains."
"There's no flaw in that jade."
"There's no flaw you can see," Toph said pointedly. "Believe me, I can feel it. But she made this piece work with it, and I want to know how."
She drew up her best highborn manners and folded her arms.
"You'll both be paid for your time."
"Right this way, ma'am."
Eel's Bed Apartment Design, Toph recognized, following the owner through the shop, into his family's living quarters, and out into a garden full of kids, giggling and studying lessons between patches of green-smelling things. Her feet told her walls ahead formed the mirror image of the building she'd just left. The garden was the center of the whole block, with shops fronting the streets and dwellings sandwiched safely between. "Scared people. I don't like this city. At all." Katara and Sokka and Aang might need a break after being chased across half the planet. She hadn't been, and she joined up with their wild bunch for adventure, tromping across new patches of ground, bending rocks she'd never felt before against real bad guys, not just opponents in the ring. And yes, even marching blind and thirsty across deserts, not knowing if she'd make it out alive. Her parents had bundled her up like a blind China doll. She wanted out. And what had Aang done? Dropped them into a city under siege. A city where nobody would listen to them. And now he was just waiting, hoping to find Appa and get the Earth King to actually read his petition, when you didn't need eyes to see that Long Feng was the guy in charge, and he didn't want a damn thing to do with any invasion plans. Avatar or not, Aang was an airbender. He'd do just about anything rather than hit a problem head on. "And I don't know what's the best thing to do yet," Toph admitted to herself, placing feet precisely on gravel. "I could bust some heads, but if the others aren't right behind me, what's that gonna solve? And Aang's not going anywhere without Appa." There had to be a way out of this. She just had to figure out who to bury in rocks to find it.
"Luli," the owner said brightly as they approached an oasis of relatively calm youngsters.
And shade, Toph recognized, feeling the sudden coolness in the air.
"This young lady would like to ask you questions about stone carving." From the shift of his feet, he was gleefully rubbing fingers together to indicate coins.
Idiot, I'm blind, not a moron.
I am Toph Beifong, of the Beifong family, Toph said with her best society attitude, coupled with the practical touch of one merchant dealing with another. I have specific questions in regard to the carving on this piece. She held up the hairpin, and I think this will take at least half an hour of your time. Toph felt the owner's face fall as the busybody realized he couldn't be away from the storefront that long. Hid a smirk as he stuttered something meant to be obsequiously polite and hurried off, waited until his footsteps thumped away, and grinned at Luli.
Is he always that bad?
Luli giggled and lowered her voice to a conspiratorial whisper.
Sometimes he's worse.
She whistled, and four sets of younger feet scampered in from various parts of the garden.
Toph Beifong, these are my daughters, Lim and Dayu.
Hi, from someone about her age, and Eep, from a girl a few years younger.
Are you blind?
Much younger. Sounded like a little boy, though Toph wasn't quite sure.
Jean Hai?
An older girl's voice, probably about Katara's age.
Please forgive my little brother, Lady Beifong. We keep trying to teach him manners, but it hasn't stuck yet.
Which sounded like a Katara kind of thing to say. But there was something else in her voice that made the earthbender prick up her ears. Something she'd heard before somewhere.
Hey, at least he knows the truth when he sees it.
Toph stuck out a hand. Toph.
Suyin.
The girl shook hands with a good grip, not the flimsy little flutter upper-class bossing Say approved of.
Don't let us bother you. We are just visiting.
Aww, Jinhai muttered. Sounded like there was a story there, but also sounded like even Jinhai was wary enough not to tell it to a complete stranger. Toph smirked a little and turned towards Luli.
You're not a bender. This was carved. So, how'd you find the flaw?
Well, first, that's Apple Mountain Jade, Luli said practically, as the kids scattered again.
It has wonderful color, but a lot of it does have flaws, usually right at the heart of the best green in it.
Sitting down on a raised stool of stone, Toph listened to an expert talk rock. This was the kind of thing she needed to teach Aang. You couldn't just learn the moves and think you knew everything. You had to study your element, poke at it, play with it, listen to it. And listen to people who knew what they were doing, benders or not. So instead of carving the flaw out to give a large piece with an awkward hole, I tapped a cut to extend the flaw and let it cleave. Luli finished practically. The color wasn't the best, but I liked how I was able to carve it into sun-dappled leaves. Her voice trailed off.
I can feel that, Toph said plainly. I can feel the stone's different anyway.
She touched the spiraling vine shape. There are different kinds of earth. One of them is more here and less over here. Luli's fingers touched hers and the jade.
This is dark green.
A fraction left. This is lighter. Shading almost to amber here. And over here is dark again. Wait, come over here. She moved into the sun and held a leafy stalk that smelled like mint still.
Feel the leaf. Where it's warm, that's sun. That's a bright green. Where it's cooler, that's darker. Where you feel it dried, that's brown.
Toph traced her fingers over mint, remembering long hours spent in her family's estate gardens. She knew what plants felt like, but what they looked like?
You're blind, her mother would always say. And I'm sorry.
No one had ever tried to show her something before, to let her see the way they saw.
So, you can feel the different kinds of earth inside stone?
Luli was almost bouncing in place as she held the mint.
Professor Tingcha would love to trade notes with you. Tingcha Wen, he's an earthbending archaeologist at Ba Sing Se University. He's Jin Hai and Su Yin's father.
I have them today because Meisheng's mixed up in some kind of paperwork over Jia and Min's classes. Honestly, I don't know how they ever get things done over there. She must have explained the kids didn't really know by a dozen times. I'm not so sure that'd be a great idea, Toph admitted. I got here on my own, but I bet I'd pick up a Judy if I tried to hit the university again. Luli's heart sped up. You're visiting the city, then? Toph lowered her voice. Yeah, I don't think we're being watched right now. You are. Almost a whisper. Jinhai's being watched. The kid? Why? Are you in trouble? I could help. I live with trouble. Toph could hear Luli's grin despite her fear. My husband's in the city guard. A massive yawn split the air from Luli's apartment. Do I hear someone slandering my good name? Just telling the truth, Luli chuckled. Toph likes the truth. Toph, this is my husband, Huojin. Solid footsteps onto gravel, the sway of a nod. Pleasure to meet you, Toph. And she could hear it again in his voice, like she had in Suyin's and Jinhai's, like she'd heard in at least half the kids through the garden. You're... Toph bit her lip before she could say it. Huojin. Fire. Metal. The name was Earth Kingdom, but the meaning and that accent? You're Fire Nation. You don't sound like other people I've met in the city, she said instead. My parents were refugees, Huojin said matter-of-factly. We came when I was 6. He shook his head. Still shows, huh? Imagine that. And he was nervous, a little, but he wasn't lying. Huh. Strange place to come for a visit on your own, Huojin mused. The city's not a good place for a kid alone. I got lucky. Healer Amaya took me in after my parents were gone. He shifted his weight, obviously eyeing her. You do have people to go to, don't you? I'm fine, Toph scowled. I can look after myself. Just asking. You looked worried, that's all. And trust me, even in the guard, it's good to have people you can ask for backup. Toph smiled ruefully. You sound like uncle. In more ways than one. I'm okay. I just need to think about something. Rocks? Luli said wryly. Or someone with a rock-hard head. Hey, Huojin protested. I resemble that remark. Toph giggled. You're as stubborn as the wall, and we both know it, Luli said affectionately. So, now that you're up, sleepyhead, are you going out for tea before you work, or should I go pump Mushi for details? You know, Huojin said dubiously, it's actually possible for Lee to go a few days without a disaster. You keep telling yourself that. Who's Lee? Toph asked, curious. A walking disaster area, Luli said brightly. Poor kid. Luli, Huojin groaned. He's a waterbender, the carver went on. Amaya's apprentice. He's a really nice young man. But if trouble were lightning, somebody dumped that kid on a mountaintop in a thunderstorm hog monkey tied in copper wire, Huojin said ruefully. So, do I need to terrorize our little angels into finishing their lessons, or have they taken after their mother and been responsible? They're as responsible as you are, love. Oh, spirits, not that. We're all doomed. A quick hug and Huojin charged into the bushes. Okay, who's got their books in order? Toph listened to childish yells wistfully. She didn't mind being an only child, honest. But sometimes... You know, if you get done thinking and you do need help, we're right here, Luli offered. That's what the guard's for, and my husband's got one of the biggest hearts in it. and the hardest head," she chuckled. "But sometimes that's just what you need." Determination. Yeah, that was the Fire Nation all over. "You're right," Toph said thoughtfully. "Sometimes it is." Rising, she bowed politely. "Thanks. That really helped." Account settled, Toph headed back toward the upper ring, scuffing her feet over the stones as she thought about elements and Long Feng and being stuck in a city that felt more and more like a sitting target. "Aang's an airbender. He tries to skate around problems. He won't take Long Feng head on. Katara, Sokka, they're water. He thinks up a plan. She comes at the bad guys sideways. Only Long Feng's already got the angles covered, so that won't work either. And me? I may be the greatest earthbender ever, but there's an awful lot of Dai Li. We need to do what none of us really knows how to do. We need to attack. We need fire." "Uncle. Spirits, she'd give a lot to have Uncle here right now. Heck, she'd take Sparky. Zuko might be hair trigger and cranky, but he sure as mountains knew how to go after something bigger and badder than he was. He'd snuck into the North Pole. The Earth King's palace couldn't be that much harder." "Keep dreaming, Toph. Uncle's the Dragon of the West, remember? The whole army's got pulverize on sight orders for him. No way is he in Ba Sing Se." "Too bad. Still, if Huojin was Fire Nation and those other kids also sounded like his kids, maybe we can find some fire here after all." Something to think about after she pounded Aang into the ground with another lesson. Another boring night, Shirong thought, perched in the shadow of a cistern atop a specific roof. Huddled a bit in his uniform, even as an evening breeze blew off the lakes. Not that there's anything wrong with boring, considering the alternative. Not knowing where the spirit was, that was the problem. Everyone was jumpy. Search as they might, the Kamui remained stubbornly out of sight. Though they had found evidence of the creature, damn it. It took imagination and unpleasant experience to recognize the fish-eaten lumps of flesh washed up on Lake Laogai's shores. For those with that experience, the tattered livers were both threat and raging incitement to break skulls. "The thing is eating people," Shirong thought darkly, fingering the whistle he had to summon reinforcements. "Right over our heads." There were a lot of angry Dai Li watching the lakeshore tonight. Not that it has to come up there. Not if it's going through the underground waterways, Shirong scowled. "Spirits, let it stay arrogant. Let it think it can keep taunting us. If it's learned to travel through artisan water, it could go anywhere." Earthen tiles trembled in his senses as a familiar weight climbed the wall and crouched on the roof. "Are you keeping an eye on the neighborhood or just me?" Shirong eyed Li, taken aback. Well. "Because if it's just me, Uncle and I are about to unroll the maps, and he made tea." "Unroll the maps?" Shirong echoed, confused. "You want to help pick out interesting spots or not?" "Interesting how?" There was something decidedly askew about the world tonight. People didn't just walk up to Dai Li. "Come on inside. Uncle thinks you might like trying a little ginseng in your oolong." Bemused, Shirong followed Li down. And yes, Mushi's blend of tea was tasty. Odd. So very odd. "How did you know I was up there?" Recalling what had been up on the roof, Shirong added, "The cistern?" "I'm not that good with water," Li said dryly. "Somebody had to be out there. I just looked." "I am a bit too old to be climbing onto roofs," Mushi smiled, unrolling a map of the world across the table. Sure you are, Shirong thought sardonically. Granted, Mushi looked like he carried a bit more weight a few months back, but given what he'd seen from Lee, if the man wanted to be up on a roof, he'd be there. So they hit a bad spot a few months back. I wonder what... Oh. If Lee had seen the Avatar destroy the Fire Navy's invasion fleet... Yes, two surviving Colonials would have been in a bad spot. The only surprise would be that they'd lived to get out of it. Details. I want details. But he couldn't risk asking. If Lee didn't trust him enough to tell him about the Avatar, then Lee didn't trust him enough. Yet. Keep your eyes open and be patient. Just being invited in was a step forward, if a slightly daunting one. How many people in Ba Sing Se would willingly have a Dai Li in for tea? It's kind of nice. And it was an excellent opportunity to gauge the pair of them. You could tell a lot about people from what was in their apartment, and what wasn't. Bare in here, aside from Mushi's bonsai. I know they're not making a lot, but most people would spend a little on dressing up the place. No wall hangings, no whimsical little lanterns or fine clothes in sight. But if those weren't two stocked travel packs tucked discreetly away in Lee's sleeping alcove, he'd eat his hat. And the map. Not an extensive map. Shirong had seen bigger and fancier in noble houses of the Upper Ring. But from what he knew, it was an accurate map. And those weren't cheap. Scraping by, and they've put their resources into being able to run again. Meaning Lee wasn't paranoid. Something bad had happened to them, and they believed it could happen again. Which led Shirong right back to the North Pole and his unsuspecting city. What in the world was he supposed to do if the Haima Jiao latched onto the Avatar? Some of the notes on the map's transparent overlay finally sank in, and Shirong tried not to let his eyebrows climb. Little corrections, what ports needed dredging, whose forces had been sighted where and when. Have you been to all these places? Quite a few, Mushi said generously, tapped Kyoshi Island's main bay. The Unagi here might be a match for your lake serpent. It feeds on young elephant koi, and the occasional unwary swimmer. I've always heard those people were crazy, Shirong muttered. Why? Lee pounced. Because they teach girls to fight? Because they thought they could stay out of the war, Shirong said levelly. Being out of the way only helps so long, and they don't have walls to protect them. The North Pole did. No. Don't ask. Yet. So, what makes a spot interesting? Ah, Mushi inclined his head. That is a matter of some debate. He touched a large island to the southeast. The Eastern Air Temple. For a moment, Shirong couldn't believe his ears. You want to visit an air temple? No one can get up there. Says the Earthbender. Lee smirked. You can if you really want to. He flipped through a stack of handwritten notes. I don't know. It's close, but you have to get through Chameleon Bay, and there's going to be fleets fighting there, if there aren't already. And it's east. People would have to come a long way. An argument against much of the East Coast, Mushi observed. I also recall that the forests are not as much as we would find convenient, and the rainfall patterns are different from both here and the west, which would be an unnecessary hindrance. His fingers moved south and west, back onto the main continent. Gaoling. Better spot, Lee nodded, tracing the coast from Chameleon Bay west. We'd still have to get through the bay, and it's a longer trip the first time. But we'd only have to pass through these coastal waters once. It's almost as far from strategic as you can get. That would help. He frowned. But it's been quiet, so there are a lot of people there, which could make it tricky.
Still a possible spot, Mushi noted. Kyoshi Island.
Too small, Lee stated, eyed his uncle. And I think they'd remember us.
Very possible, Mushi acknowledged, a gleam of pure mischief in his green eyes.
It wasn't my fault! Mushi raised a gray brow.
But they didn't!
Words failed Lee, and he buried his head in his hands, groaning.
What happened to you on Kyoshi Island? Shirong asked warily.
To me, nothing, Mushi smiled. But my nephew happened to them. Let us say both sides disagreed.
And you're still in one piece?
Shirong eyed Lee.
I've heard their warriors aren't pushovers.
They're not. Lee lifted his head, still looking a bit sheepish.
They're good.
He looked aside, thoughtful. Mushi cleared his throat.
No.
But I could.
I do not think so.
But they'd be really...
Skilled as they are, they have made their stance in this war clear, Mushi stated. It would take extraordinary delicacy of manner to persuade them to even consider our plea. And when it comes to diplomacy...
Subtle, you're not,
Shirong added dryly. Considered the locations they'd mentioned, and frowned.
They're not just looking for some place to visit. What are they looking for?
The Southern Air Temple, Mushi suggested.
No, Lee shuddered.
I agree, Mushi admitted, glanced at Shirong. It was unpleasant to visit before, but now that we know you are vulnerable to some spirits, I do not know what Fire Lord Sozin's commanders were thinking, to leave so many without funeral pyres. The risk of staying beyond nightfall would be far too great.
Shirong studied the map anew, dredging up old history lessons. What little citizens were officially taught about the temples focused on the Fire Nation's attacks on the Earth Kingdom. But it started here, in the Air Temples.
It's been 100 years.
In some rooms, the bones still lie as thick as scythed wheat, Mushi said gravely. It is not pleasant to consider you have kin among those who carried out such attacks.
Out of the corner of his eye, Shirong watched Lee, trying to catch flickers of emotion on that scarred face. Anger, guilt, sorrow, determination. He thinks what the Fire Nation did is wrong, and he wants to do something about it. What, exactly, Lee thought he might do? Shirong had no idea. Lee was a teenager. Then again, the Avatar's barely more than a child. These two got into Ba Sing Se. Whatever they're planning, I wouldn't want to bet against them.
I'm still trying to grasp what you consider interesting.
Mushi's smile held amusement and challenge.
The Western Air Temple.
Upside down would take some getting used to, Lee reflected.
It's well placed, but I'm not sure we want to be somewhere you can rappel down into. But maybe, he touched the map. We'd be going west through lakes. That might be safer.
And that route leads to other possibilities,
Mushi acknowledged. Taku.
Pohai's stronghold, Lee countered. Yes, though I believe someone illustrated that it was not the most secure of fortresses,
Mushi chuckled. Shirong stared. Mushi smiled back, and Lee tried to look elsewhere.
He broke into Pohai's stronghold? And he was still alive to tell about it. Unbelievable!
Mushi? Shirong asked bluntly. What have you been teaching this boy?
Everything he would learn, Mushi said with great satisfaction.
though some of the credit is not mine. The arts of stealth were never my specialty. Lee, Shirong noted wryly, was blushing.
You knew?
The waterbender muttered. I lost no little sleep worrying, Mushi answered quietly. But I knew you would not have attempted it if you were not certain you could. He regarded Lee with quiet pride. I rely on you to do what you believe is right, and I trust that you will do so with care and proper planning. Compliment and gentle rebuke in one, Shirong judged, seeing Lee's ears go red. On the one hand, he was tempted to tell Mushi to ease up. The boy was only 16. On the other, if he's taking Pohai stronghold-level risks, I'm amazed Mushi hasn't locked him in a room to calm him down. No wonder Mushi wanted Lee working himself into the ground. Spirits only knew what kind of trouble he'd find if he didn't. So, next was Gaipan? Lee managed. Fire Nation territory, for the last several years, Shirong pointed out. And apparently prone to floods, Mushi mused. An upland near there might have promise, but... He shrugged and let his finger trace around the mountainous coast, almost to the very northernmost tip of the continent. And then there is here. Chilly, Shirong observed dryly. You got clear of the North Pole once. Why would you come that close again? Even if there is a stretch of ocean between. Not as much as you think, Lee said seriously. It snows up there, and the winter nights are dark. But high as it is, the mountain tops are warm. He frowned and nodded. At least as warm as Ba Sing Se. Shirong glanced at Mushi, startled. How is that possible? Fortuitous air currents, it would seem, the older man informed him. Though I also suspect this mountain, here, may be volcanic. He tapped the map just slightly west. The natural gas underneath the range can be a hazard if one delves too deep in the earth. But that itself could be an asset, properly applied. Not the temple, Lee smiled wryly. Next door. It was cultivated once and could be again. Mushi agreed. Yet it would be far enough from the current occupants to not impose. Wait, wait, wait. Shirong held up halting hands. Temple? There's an air temple in Earth Kingdom, and it's inhabited? The Fire Nation left no survivors. Mushi cut him off. Those who dwell there today are from a village destroyed a decade past by flood. They are of Earth. Though living that high has made them a bit odd. Crazy as an airbender, Lee muttered. I'm keeping my feet on the ground. Likely wise, Mushi chuckled. Shirong looked at the map, and them, and Lee's extensive, exhaustive notes, and sat back, stunned. You're not planning a visit. Agent Shirong, Mushi said, quiet and serious. As a guardian of this city, what would happen if Ba Sing Se fell? Shirong felt chill. It won't, Mushi inclined his head. But if it did? We'll fight to the last man standing. You know that. Shirong half rose from his chair, angry. If you know something... It's not like that. Lee was on his feet, hands out and empty between them. It's not. Just, Shirong, listen. His voice dropped. You don't know what's out there. Or more accurately, who? Mushi said gravely. For the first time since the siege of Ba Sing Se, a descendant of Sozin's line has taken to the battlefield in war. Shirong swallowed hard, sank back into his chair, legs suddenly nerveless. I thought, rumor said the Crown Prince was exiled. Prince Zuko was indeed, Mushi said, levelly. Princess Azula was not. Slow breaths, Shirong told himself, trying to keep the world from graying out. One of the royal family on the battlefield. The last time that had happened. Keep it together. You've got to tell Quan. If she's the younger heir, she can't be more than a child. Don't, Lee said harshly. Don't ever make that mistake. It'll be the last one you make. She's 14, true, Mushi said, equally grim. But she is a firebending prodigy and a tactical genius. I believe even the Dragon of the West would pause if he faced her in the field. He swept a hand over the map. So I ask you, as a guardian of your city and a loyal citizen of the Earth Kingdom, what hope do your people have if Ba Sing Se falls? I hope it doesn't, Lee said quietly. I hope you can stand her off. But if things go wrong, and damn it, around me things always go wrong. Shirong, if she takes you, your Earth Kingdom, you're just dead. If she gets us... I see. And he did. Horribly enough. They're afraid. These two aren't even afraid of Dai Li, and they're afraid. You're going to run, Shirong said bleakly. Again. I'm not running, Lee said grimly. I'm tired of running. He took a breath. But sometimes you have to make a strategic retreat. Call it what you want. They were planning to run. Why had he expected any better? Spies didn't stand and fight. Wait, Shirong told himself, through the haze of outrage and disappointment. Think. What are they looking at? Resources, rain, how cold it is, how many people there are, how to get past those fighting the war. What do you mean by hope? Mushi saw the dawning wonder in his face and smiled. The only hope that matters. The hope to live to fight another day. You were planning a resistance outpost. It was incredible. Impossible. They were refugees. Fire Nation colonials, no less. They had no money, no resources, no authority. And none of that would make a difference if Ba Sing Se fell, Shirong realized. It'd be chaos, panic, blood in the streets. If they meant to get people out, all they'd have to know is where to find supplies to commandeer, how to talk people into seizing them, and how to get people to listen to them long enough to evacuate. Like he was listening, right now. Lee's been all over the city working with Amaya. He's found allies in the university, the guard, even the palace. He knows how to find us. And who knows what contacts Mushi's made in that tea shop. Spirits, I think they could do this. Try, at least. Succeed? It seemed unreal. I guess it might work for that, Lee said, after sharing a glance with his uncle. But that wasn't exactly... The Fire Nation's not going to destroy Ba Sing Se. It's too big, too valuable. Unless she's having a really bad day. He took a breath. What we're looking at is, if that happens, some people shouldn't be here. Me, Uncle, Professor Tingcha and his family, anybody who knows something about the catacombs under the city, Healer Amaya, and anyone else we can get out who'd poke a hole into any plans to hold the city. He hesitated and looked Shirong straight in the eye. Your families. Shirong smiled wryly, the offer bittersweet. Would that I had one. But it was a valiant point. If Ba Sing Se ever fell, it wouldn't do at all to have Dai Li families in enemy hands. I still think it's impossible. That may be, Mushi acknowledged. But we would rather prepare for a disaster that will never come than be cast adrift in the typhoon. He gestured to the map. So,
What do you think we should consider? It was impossible. It should have seemed ridiculous. But if there was one thing he'd learned studying Lee, it was that, despite his masquerade as an Earth Kingdom refugee, the young waterbender didn't have a deceptive bone in his body. And here were two people with a map, who'd been to places he'd never see. Tell me about the air temples. Hours later, Shirong was back on a rooftop, thinking. Learn your enemy's nature, and half the battle is won. Not that the Avatar was his enemy. Spirits, no. But a threat to Ba Sing Se, yes, that he might very well be. And while Lee hadn't breathed one word about the Avatar, he'd been almost talkative when it came to the temples. The sorrow of the Southern, the peacefulness of the Eastern, the head-hurting upside-down architecture of the Western. How does it even stay standing? Shirong had asked, disbelieving. No clue, Lee had muttered, shaking his head as if to blot out memory. Maybe they found a bunch of insane earthbenders to hook it into the clifftop. And paid with many barrels of cactus juice, Mushi had added wryly. Though when it came to the Northern, Lee had been a lot more picky with his details. Shirong couldn't blame him. Mention in the colonies that you'd seen anyone gliding, and you'd probably find yourself wrung dry by Fire Nation interrogators, all the while knowing you were responsible for unleashing rabid firebenders on innocent people. They've been literally around the world. How? Why? It makes sense if they'd been spying for the Fire Nation. But if that were the case, there shouldn't be a Northern Air Temple anymore. On the other hand, if they hadn't visited there until after Mushi had decided his nephew's injury merited an unannounced retirement, why go there? North, a lot of ocean and difficult terrain, Shirong reflected. Not a bad place to break your trail if you were worried about Fire Nation pursuit. Which seemed to fit what he'd seen of them. Lee tried to hide it, but the healer moved like he was expecting an ambush. Always. But that doesn't make sense. If no one knew he was a waterbender, why chase them? They're just two colonials. Or were they? Mushi seemed to know things about everywhere in the world. What else was hidden behind wise eyes? Questions upon questions. Though if they'd been enough places to see the war's horrors firsthand, well, it explained why Lee was as determined to learn healing as he must have been to learn swords. There was nothing worse than having someone die on you and knowing you could have done something, if only you'd known how. Healer or not, Lee was still a fighter, none too subtly prying for details on the Haima Jiao whenever they'd pause to brainstorm. Given it was the young man's neck on the line, Shirong had obliged, though he'd left out exactly how angry his fellow Dai Li were. An agent was always cool, calm, and inhuman. Ask anyone. Lake Laogai, Mushi had mused. If it is lairing there, and not in truly sunless waters below the earth, either there is more salt in the lake, or there are other reasons such a creature is more comfortable. Lee had looked alarmed. Did something happen there? I'll look into it, Shirong had answered, and knew no one was fooled. Bad, yes. Something that would upset the spirits more than usual? Difficult to say. They'd been mind-bending Judees and troublemakers for decades, imprisoning or executing those the Grand Secretariat deemed necessary, shaping Ba Sing Se as it must be. Why should the spirits decide now was any worse than times past? Before, we didn't have the Avatar's Bizen. He'd attended more than a few of Tingcha's lectures on Qin the Conqueror, trying to gauge if the professor were alluding to the current war in ways that might be too dangerous. What the man had said about Qin, Kyoshi, and badger moles
had made him interested enough to look up the Daili's own records of avatars, which implied the bison might not be just a bison. Avatars have animal guides. Kyoshi didn't meet hers until after she defeated Qin, but she had a badger mole. Roku had a dragon. The avatar was being kept from his bison. The spirits might be very upset indeed. Enough to unleash a man-eater on our city? Our people are innocent. But the Daili served the people, and the Daili were not. Oma and Shu, that can't be it. Long Feng wouldn't order the bison kept if it put our people at risk. He wouldn't. When had he stopped being sure? Mind on the job, Shirong told himself grimly, looking about in the night. First, keep the water Kamui from grabbing any more waterbenders. Second, find the damn thing and arrange for a spirit roast. Third, work on his recruits. At least that last seemed to be going well. Once they'd talked out the map, Lee had shyly shown him some of the latest scroll's moves. A flex of fingers that turned water into lethal claws of ice. Useful in and of itself. Deadly daggers were no small asset. And when those claws could be thrown? Yes, a Daili knew how handy that could be. But Lee had surprised him yet again. How do the gloves work? From anyone else, Shirong would have laughed. A waterbender whose first training had been in firebending forms, and he thought he could figure out how to shape ice like rock? But he'd never seen a waterbender create a move like Lee had. A net strong enough to drag a malicious Kamui off its prey to trap it, even if only for a minute. It couldn't hurt to try. Well, now we know how many ways it won't work, Shirong thought wryly. I'm sure he'll be at it again tomorrow. And again, until he gets something to work. From a purely practical point of view, that was useful in itself. A waterbender practicing might draw their prey into the open. I hope he survives. He'd hate to lose any recruit. Lee more than most. The young man had talent, drive, the pure will needed not to give up. And they had me in for tea, Shirong admitted, recalling the warmth, the friendly looks, their honest respect for his opinion. I could get used to that. Oh. Oh, spirits. Rueful admiration in his gaze, Shirong eyed a dark window below. Mushi, you are a sly, conniving, wonderful old man. A lost pygmy puma, abandoned to live by its wits. That's how he'd thought of Lee, that first day with the bear. An impression that had only strengthened with the first waterbending scroll, and how fast the younger healer had blossomed under Amaya's teaching. But if that were true of Lee, how much more was it true of himself? I'm not alone. I trust my friends, and I can always take the uniform off and... There. That was the sticking point. If he wanted something beyond the Daili, he had to hide what he was, who he was. With those two, he didn't have to hide anything. I think someone just tried to recruit me. Well, well, well. That man, Shirong thought wryly, has the guts of a first-class cat burglar. And was it wrong for him to feel delighted instead of offended? Puzzles, the pair of them, an intricate web of honest mysteries Mushi had all but invited him to unravel. Let's play, Shirong smiled, plotting out exactly what he'd search for once his shift was over. Pohai Stronghold, He could hardly wait.